Ray Thompson describes himself as a revenue and operations executive specializing in profitable growth and scale. He's managing partner at Buy, Build, Sell, LLC. Ray joins the Plutopia podcast this time from his road trip, traveling with his family on a quest to visit all 50 states.
I met hundreds of people. I've spent 2 hours in a hardware store in Custer talking to a gentleman, you know. I've spent times at sitting at the bar eating a steak with someone I'd never met, you know, and artist studios in Maine, and you name it. I've met all kinds, and we might have certain leanings, you know, but I didn't meet the radicalized piece segment that the media focuses on. It was not present. And, I found that really encouraging and inspiring, really. And that was a great part of the trip, just meeting that many people and seeing how close we really are if we just take the time to spend more time together talking to each other as opposed to exchanging comments on Facebook or social media.
Hey, welcome everybody to yet another episode of the Plutopia News Network podcast. I'm here with my co-host and partner, Scoop Sweeney. And our guest today is Ray Thompson. Ray, who is a managing partner currently at Buy, Build, Sell, LLC, where they help people to become business owners through acquisitions. But I met Ray back like in the late 1990s, I guess it was, when I was working for Whole Foods Market and he was with a company called Exor, which developed an e-commerce site for Whole Foods. And Ray and I have been friends and connected through social media for years, but we haven't actually seen each other face to face in a while. So welcome, Ray. I asked Ray to join us because he posted that he'd been on a 20,000 mile road trip. Do I have that right? 20,000 miles?
Yeah, it'll be 23,000 by the time I'm done. So yes, almost done.
Oh, you're still on it, huh? Wow.
Yeah, well, I'm actually in the Tucson desert right now, enjoying beautiful fields and mountains.
So what are you traveling in? What kind of vehicular arrangement do you have?
I have a 34-foot travel trailer that houses the whole family and two dogs, surprisingly.
So how big is that, the family?
Current part of the family too. We've got still one left in the nest for another 4 years, and then we're empty nesters. And then my wife and I, one teenager left, and two dogs.
It doesn't feel too crowded, I guess.
Some days it feels way too crowded, but you know, some days like today, it's spacious and open air. So today's a beautiful day and nothing but fields of winter wheat to see as far as the eye can see.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, isn't Starlink an amazing thing? Doing this from the desert.
Oh, yeah. So what kind of bandwidth do you get via Starlink?
You know, I'm typically getting 200 to 300 megabits. So pretty, and with really low latency too. So it feels probably more than that. And for that little time I'm working these days, it's perfect. It works out. It's worked everywhere, 31 states. So
are you like doing your usual work along the way, or have you limited that?
Yeah. I mean, well, this year is about, you know, partially taking a hiatus from a really, you know, big 5-year run in public markets. We did a lot of acquisitions of companies, and so left me a little wanting a break, so I left on the trip for that. But I also started Buy, Build, Sell this year to help people, you know, democratize entrepreneurship a little bit more and make it more accessible to more people. So I've been starting that up, but also you know, still COO of another little tech company doing Department of Defense work. So, you know, I'm not working hard, but I'm working, and get to do more of my schedule, which has been part of the shift for this year.
You're working virtually for the most part, I guess.
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always liked that.
That shift to being free to work when you work and where you work is that's a nice shift. So,
yeah, when I was working, I worked for Kaiser Permanente's IT group in California. So in the last 5 years I was with them, I got to do it from my home here east of Austin. And that's a wonderful way to work. Yeah, I could.
It is.
I didn't have to dress for the office. I just had to connect and hope for the best as far as bandwidth.
Yeah, and if the kids are sick, you take care of them. And if you got to go to the grocery store in the middle of the day, you do it. So it's changes your life when you have that kind of freedom.
Yeah, and from time to time, you change out of your pajamas, briefly at least.
Well, at least the
top
half. At least
that's the way it was for me.
You know, the good thing about doing a podcast is I only have to be clothed from the waist up.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice shift for sure. And not looking to go back to any offices anytime soon.
So what was your specific goal for this road trip? Was it just to take some time off or to give yourself a break? Or do you have other things you wanted to kind of accomplish with it?
Yeah, you know, it was two or three, you know, points. One, yeah, it was a much needed break. Two, I've spent a lot of time traveling internationally, but I've never, well, once when I was 16, I did a road trip with my mom across the US. But other than that, just to take a real long road trip and see the US and all of its beauty, you know, on a slow level, you know, I got to see 31 states so far this year. I've actually now closed the loop. I've seen all the states except for Alaska. So I got a trip to Alaska to make check off the last state. But I also got to see the fall leaves change across 14 states this year. So it was just a way to slow it down and really enjoy the people and the geography like never before. But, you know, also on a personal level, in 2 weeks, I will have outlived my mom. She died at my age, 2 weeks from now. And it was kind of a homage to her to take her along on that journey with me and close a long chapter, you know, of losing her early in life. And, so, you know, that and a few other things, you know, it was, wanted to prove I could start the businesses without being landlocked and, you know, give the teenager some time to see the world before he has to go off into the world, you know. So it hit a lot of points, personal and professionally.
Can you kind of detail for us the ground that you've covered on this trip? I assume you started in Boulder.
I did, yeah. It was designed to be a clockwise tour around the outer part of the U.S. Basically to run from winter for an entire year because I've had 40 years of winter and I was just tired of it. So, yeah, we went straight north through to Montana. We went fast quickly through Wyoming because we spent a lot of time in Wyoming, but we spent a good month or so in Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota area, and then made our way across and ended up in Acadia up in Maine, and then just made a slow multi-month track down the southeast coast. We have family in Pennsylvania and South Carolina and Alabama, so we slowed that down through Thanksgiving and Christmas. And you know, most of my life I didn't spend with my father. You know, we were separated early on, so to really spend some time with him, I got a good 2 months with him, just hanging out as opposed to just flying in for a weekend, and you know, really slowing down, you know, and hanging out with the people that are important in my life, but are, you know, are getting, you know, along in years. And so that was a really wonderful piece of the trip. And then it was down for a month into Florida and seeing the Keys and the Everglades and all the beautiful things. Actually, I love the winter time down in Florida. It's really nice. Ironically, I was running away from winter the entire year, and the one place that I got stuck in winter was snow in the top panhandle of Florida and Louisiana. Shut down I-10 for 2 or 3 days.
Oh, that's weird.
And it's the only time I've seen snow the entire year in Florida of all places. So, and also, you know, this last leg has been coming back west, and I spent a few weeks here in Tucson and going to backtrack to New Mexico to see the family for spring break, and then we're all going to caravan back north to Boulder to complete the journey.
Yeah, the whole idea
Did you
of
drive?
commuting seasonally. I have a bunch of friends who will spend their time in the winter here in the Austin area, but as soon as summer approaches, they are suddenly up in Colorado. And it's a number of people doing that, but it's makes a lot of sense when you've been in Austin in the summer when it's 110,
Oh.
112.
Yeah, I've been there. It's really hot. And I definitely understand the appeal, the Florida, Arizona, Texas, Southern Texas areas. Padre, was down in there on the island for a little bit. Just it was really, I ran into a lot of people who do that kind of by annual kind of switch between north and south. And I definitely get the appeal now for sure.
Snowbirds,
Indeed.
that sort of thing.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I would love to spend the I think I'd like to spend this next summer in maybe the North Pole or thereabouts. Oh, and you did say that you had driven to Alaska. Which part of Alaska were you in?
Well, actually, we canceled that leg. We got off to a little bit of a late start because we had planned
Ah,
on
okay.
hitting Alaska before, the winter set in, and after the bugs was the goal. After bugs, before winter. Turns out that that leg is, well, first of all, we had fires burning in Jasper and in Canada at the time, so that kind of set some of it on its edge, and then we got off late, so we had, and it's an extra, people don't realize it's an extra 3,200 miles one way, just to get to Anchorage, and that's before you head north. So, extra 6,000-7,000 miles, you got to really, one of the first lessons I learned, my wife and I are planning gurus. If we put like 100 points on the map that we were going to visit, and then 2 weeks into it, we realized this is not going to work. So we took those points and halved them. And then after that, we halved them again, because you realize once you get out there, you need more time. There's so much beautiful country to see, and to put yourself on a schedule, it's a mistake for anybody doing a long-term trip like that.
Yeah, and there's parts of Alaska you can't even reach by a car.
Oh yeah, it's all by
So
flight or boat. So yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I think it deserves a devoted trip as what we decided. Fly up, drive up, and then do airplane, water planes and trip, boats around it, I think would be a great way to see it.
Yeah,
So
cruise is a great way to do it. They have really nice cruises up there, and you can cruise. You can take a cruise from, let's see, I guess we took a cruise from Whittier to Vancouver, and that was pretty amazing. We saw a number of glaciers on that cruise. It's actually intended to be a glacier cruise.
Yeah, I
No.
would
Did
love to
you
do
see
that.
any
I've
glaciers
heard
on your
great things.
trip?
We did well. Yeah, I mean, there's glaciers up
Like
in
Glacier
Glacier National.
National Park?
Yeah, that was unexpected. It really was. I mean, we're in Colorado. We are blessed with lots of national park beauty, but I have to say that glacier was just a whole new level. It was, you couldn't capture it in a photo. You couldn't even capture the how big it was just looking at it. It was really truly awe-inspiring, and the number of different climate zones, from the cedar forest to the high plains to the clearest, some of the clearest lakes I've ever seen in my life. I highly recommend it. But I think everybody makes a mistake, John. I think everybody makes a mistake. They go into West Glacier, where all the people are, because it's the easiest one to get to, and they're intimidated by the extra hour or the 45-minute drive north to come down through. And it's a much quieter way to come through the park, and it's very beautiful. But the time commitment's a little extra.
Well, when John sends out invitations to people to join our podcast, he inquires about your experience and what you want out of life. And one thing I saw in the one he sent to you, and that you kindly returned, that you did something called Carterpalooza, a backyard music gig. And I'm yes. fascinated by that. I spent a lot of time in the Bay Area producing bands and concerts. And so I know the ups and downs of those kind of things, but you know, you're inviting the world into your backyard.
Yeah. The whole thing started off as, so we, my wife and I are in a, you know, if there was a garage band that you could put below in the basement, we would be the basement garage band. We're that we, you know, we're very basic. And after COVID was, you know, kind of on the tail end, everybody was still nervous about getting together, but we wanted to get all of our friends together. We were involved pretty, you know, a lot in the local music scene and the amateur music scene in Boulder. And we said, well, why don't we just have a gathering in our backyard? People can do social distancing, but let's enjoy some music outdoors. And so the first year it was, you know, there were three bands and I think 50 people, you know, were there. 4 years later, you know, we're renting porta potties and, you know, seven bands coming through with, and these are, our goal with this was to just have friends in music, you know, amateur music, but, you know, we have some friends who are semi-pro and, you know, in bluegrass and, but we have teenage, you know, still in high school singer songwriters, you know, who come up and have their first album coming out. And it's just a place where it was, if you want to make music, the instruments are there, come, and we've got the equipment and we've got some really forgiving neighbors in our backyard, and our backyard faces, you know, some acreage. So we're not bothering too many people. And we get loud about once a year in late October. And so we live on Carter Trail, so we start calling it Carterpalooza, and it's a lot of fun, and it's become a lot of work, as I'm sure you know, Scoop.
Yes, one of the bands that I managed in the Bay Area was foolish enough to let one of their friends book us into their backyard concert, and this was a hard rock band, and this was, you know, 1980s hard rock, and I kept warning everyone's like, this is not going to work. I'm going to get it in a contract because that's the only way you can do that sort of thing, because you know it's going to be shut down. And halfway through the show, you know, the Hayward police show up. It's like, boys, and that solidified my business skills with the band, because they realized how important it is to have a contract, because we still got paid.
Yeah. Wow. This is, I think when, after we finish this trip, my wife and I got to really think hard if we want to do Carterpalooza number 5, because, you know, trying to limit the exposure, and thankfully our neighbors come, you know, everybody's, you know, it turned into a block party in a way, you know, backyard block party, but any more complicated, and I'm not sure that we can handle it at our house anymore.
But so speaking of your house, you've left your house behind for all this time that you're spending on the road. Is somebody taking care of it, or
yeah, you know,
how are you managing that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, well, we have friends locally, you know, of course, but we actually ended up bumping into a couple that was moving to the area from LA, who wanted to just, you know, didn't want to live there for a full year because they wanted some time to settle in the Boulder and look for a house. So they moved in with their two old dogs, and we left it furnished for them, and you know, they took care of it, so it worked out. So
perfect. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, what are some of the most memorable sights that you've seen on this trip, other than what we've already talked about?
You know, you know, it's I was really pleasantly surprised by the BLM land outside of South Dakota, outside of Custer specifically. It was just beautiful area. The people were really kind and hospitable, and it was just so quiet, John. And I'm surprised it's not on the dark sky registry, because the stars there were just, you know, as beautiful as I saw. And I was also down in Big Bend this year out in that desert. And I was really excited about that dark sky because the desert there, it's just so beautiful. But I was
Yeah, that's
there for a,
fantastic.
it is. And Big Bend's, you know, such an underrated national park. However, I was there for a full moon, so I did not get to see the sky that I wanted to see. So I was grateful that I saw it in South Dakota. And
You can always come back.
I will, you know, which leads me to another one of my favorites that we didn't talk about, being able to camp right on the beach on the Padre Island National Seashore. That was a real joy, I got to say. Almost got the big camper stuck there because pulling this beast is, you know, it weighs about 8,000 pounds. So the Chevy truck did well, but it's not made for Baja. So, but that was really pretty being right there at the beach and literally working with the sound of the waves crashing, you know, next to me, 5 feet away.
So were you near Corpus or did you go farther south on Padre Island?
No, I went all the way down to Mustang State Park, which is near the beach. And then I also went just over, actually camped on the shoreline. They have places where you can just take your vehicle right out on the national shoreline. And there's about a 5 mile stretch there that's just kind of like open, you know, land, if you will. You can go and just park by the beach. And it was great to be there at time of year because I could barely see a neighbor on either side of me. That's how far apart everybody was. So it felt like your own personal beach. I imagine during the spring and the summer, it's probably a little different.
Yeah, they have a pretty active spring break down there, I think, as most
Yeah.
beaches do.
Yeah. You know, to me, John, the places that were this, you know, I reread, you know, the David Thoreau books and Emerson, you know, books. And I really wanted to embrace the quiet places and the solitude on this trip. And I think those places really struck me more than, you know, the popular places that people normally visit. I mean, they were fine. I'm like, you know, Acadia National Park was beautiful, but the more enriching part of the trip was just some of the New England states out in the country, you know, your New Hampshire, Connecticut, Massachusetts areas outside of the big cities. You know, the leaves changing there was just, it was just gorgeous, you know? So, you know, to me that the roads less traveled were the more inspiring places, I think.
Did you visit Walden Pond?
I did not, but not by pure synchronicity. I was driving by it when I was re-listening to his book. And then I saw a sign on the highway as Audible was going, and as I go by the sign, Walden Pond, next exit. But I had a destination. I had to get to at a certain time that day, or I would have certainly done it. But
you were on a mission.
Yeah, I was on a mission to get to a spot that day. So, but yeah. It's neat. It's neat to be driving through the places where those books were written and to take it in, take the history in.
Well, you know, there's a lot of tension and division in this country right now. It's about as bad as it's ever been. And I just wonder if you saw or felt that as you drove through various places, and I'm sure you met a lot of people along the way. Is that something that is really apparent as you're moving through the country, or does that tend to be more just within the media?
I'm really glad you asked that question because that's probably one of the most important learnings on this trip was because I was driving right through the election time, as you know. So, and I was driving mostly through rural red states, let's also say, you know. So you could always tell by the signage, you know, where things were stood. But I have to say, the media has really missed on this. They really have. I think one of the things I said, Scoop, in my show notes was I relearned that 99% of the people in the world are really amazing people. We all care about the same things. We're not as far apart as any of us would like us, anybody would like us to think we are. We care about family, we care about friendship, we care about sharing experiences and being good stewards of the land. Certainly, I had political conversations that were interesting, but none that were out of the realm of disagreement. You know, it was civil discourse in all cases. And I met hundreds of people. I've spent 2 hours in a hardware store in Custer talking to a gentleman. You know, I've spent times at sitting at the bar eating a steak with someone I'd never met, you know, and artist studios in Maine, and you name it. I've met all kinds. And you know, we're all this, John. We might have certain leanings, you know, but I didn't meet the radicalized piece segment that the media focuses on. It was not present. And I found that really encouraging and inspiring, really. And that was a great part of the trip, just meeting that many people and seeing how close we really are if we just take the time to spend more time together talking to each other, as opposed to exchanging comments and on Facebook or social media.
Yeah, John and I both grew up in the same little town in Red, West Texas, deep Red, West Texas. And so we had experiences with folks that were very conservative. My parents were very conservative. And I've remained friends with a lot of those people that I grew up with, and they're deep Red. And when you're talking just about things involving your life, you know, politics, you know, doesn't really come into it unless you know, really heavily into the political action that's going on. But I found that most people are just wanting to, you know, live their lives. And the only thing about the current stress and strain in politics that really concerns me, because I love going to the national parks, and those are being heavily impacted because I actually have some friends that were cut from the Park Service. And that does make me kind of quite sad, because that's one of the really great things about this country is they've reserved all this great wild nature and, you know, care for it in our behalf. And having those people, you know, done away with it's concerning. Have you experienced any of those impacts on the road?
You know, I didn't, but, you know, I was through a lot of those after, you know, this recent round of layoffs. And I found, I spent a lot of time in state parks, national parkland, BLM, and they are wonderful stewards of our land and of our resources, and very important to what we all get to enjoy still, those who choose to enjoy it. And but I've seen that the upkeep is still there. I've seen that the staffing levels were still adequate. But like I said, I was there. I was going through all of that at times when, you know, the recent shifts in, you know, staffing policy, to keep it lightly, have been enacted. So I'm not sure. I think we're still early days to tell what the impacts are going to be. But, you know, as a person who just enjoyed this land for the 8 months that I have in the way that I got to, I really hope that we, you know, wake up and remember how important it is to keep those lands in good shape and to be good stewards of it.
Yeah, that's kind of baffling. I don't know quite how to address the problem the decision at the administration level to just cut stuff without investigation and without analysis or any real thought about it, just kind of removing jobs. It's distressing, but we don't really seem to have any good way to put an end to it. I guess we can encourage people to call their legislators or to give feedback to the White House or whatever, but yeah. I'm not sure that that's going to make a difference right now. And I guess what my bigger concern is that some of those beautiful national park lands that you visited will have quite a bit of drilling going on at some point.
Yeah. Well, John, I mean, we grew up in the tech world, right? Where the mantra is fail fast, break things, you know, be agile. And that doesn't apply to federal government, where things need to are methodical, decided among, you know, over decades as opposed to minutes. And, you know, when you make short-term decisions that have long-term effects, you know, I think it's the, but I just don't think the philosophy applies as well in at a governmental level as it did in the tech world. And I think the question's still out if it actually worked in the tech world, right? So,
well, the stakes are real different, you know.
They are, and the scope of the effect is much larger, right? So, it's concerning.
Absolutely.
You know, it's concerning for sure. And yeah, I mean, I understand it. I understand the impetus to apply tech mentality to the government, because I'm sure many people are frustrated with how well the government's functioning for them. And but it's not, you know, it's not something that you rip and tear, you know, and make short-term decisions. You make, you know, you make them on a different level. So it's disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm breathing a deep sigh right now. But we're not politicians, I guess.
Well, the encouraging news, you know, the calls into Congress are going, I read recently, moved from like 40 calls per minute to 1600 calls per minute. So it is activating the constituency. So I think that's a light in the equation, if you will.
Yeah, people are upset, and rightly so. And I think that we're in a situation where the people speaking up is kind of the best recourse that I can think of, or the only recourse that I can think of. Did you, when you were driving from place to place, driving around the country, did you run into any people who were kind of overtly political in that they were trying to make a case with you for some political position or anything like that? Or do you think people kind of stay away from that?
No, people were not shy about expressing their deep political beliefs on the trip. And I'll note one gentleman that I met at a golf course, who owned the golf course, and he was quite direct. He's an older gentleman. And, you know, I just said, wow, that's an interesting view, you know. And I saw him for a couple of days, and by the third day, you know, we were talking and getting along quite well. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with having strong opinions or strong desires to share your opinions with others. I actually encourage it. I think that something that we have maybe lost in the U.S. a little bit is the ability to have civil discourse with each other and be friends on the other side. I hope more people do it. You know, I have a few people that in my life that are, you know, have different political beliefs than I do, but I know that it's safe to have long, arduous debates about the state of the world, and then to go enjoy a beer or, you know, afterward, or hang out. And I wish more of us did it, John, because I think we would have a better society as a result of it.
Yeah, well, there's a degree of intolerance, I guess, that's crept into many conversations now. And
yeah,
I think that it's somewhat manufactured by people who feel that they'll benefit from a kind of divisiveness within this country. And I'm very concerned about that. And we try, you know, on our podcast here, we try not to get into, I mean, we speak very critically about politics from time to time, but I don't want to get into the kind of discourse where that doesn't respect the other views, I guess.
Yeah,
it's a matter of respect and a matter of tolerance.
Agreed.
And I think
I think it's important to have the conversations, though, and to have the disagreements, because both people learn something in the exchange.
Yeah, and I kind of get from you that for the most part, that's the way it's been. That you haven't run into too many people who are intolerant.
No, and I've been able to engage with them in my different views and in their local communities, and to be appreciated and to have a mutual respect. I really did not run into any, heated exchanges that we get to see elsewhere, that get highlighted. People were pretty steady, and but I spent a lot of time, John, in small towns, small local towns where, that community was a part of it. So maybe that was a part of my particular experience.
Well, that is a good question. To what extent did you spend any time in cities? Were you kind of avoiding cities?
With every chance I got. In fact, the only reason I would end up in some, I ended up going through parts of downtown New York. I mean, just so you know, I'm 54 feet long total. I'm as long as a semi. So trying to traverse an urban area is hectic, to say the least, and it raises your blood pressure. And the only reason I ever spent any time in downtown New York was because I realized that, and this is an important point for any future travelers, Connecticut and New York, if you see something labeled as a parkway, you cannot drive that road with a truck of any sort because the bridges are too short. And so I was saved by a local police officer who saved me from about 200 yards going into a tunnel that I was going to knock off the top of the camper. So she rerouted me through, but it was too stressful, to be honest, to drive through the downtowns. I don't know how truck drivers do it to deliver freight. But yeah, I didn't want to be anywhere near a big city for this trip. I spent all my time outside of it.
That actually sounds pretty great.
It was.
Scoot mentioned he and I both grew up in a relatively small city or town. What was it? We had, I think the population at its most was 40,000.
Yeah, roughly.
And
mostly that was from the Air Force base. When they shut down, it dropped dramatically.
Yeah, that cut it in half, I think, to 20, 22,000, something like that. And I've always kind of preferred small towns to big cities.
Yeah.
Though I live in I moved into a town, a large town that has now become a big city. And yeah, I'm learning to tolerate it.
I identify with that. As part of the impetus of the trip was, I've lived in Boulder for 40 years, and I was, I've seen it grow up kind of like Austin. I loved Austin. I loved the time that, we spent together down there. But Boulder's the same way. It's kind of grown up, and I was just craving the open country a little bit, and less hectic. So, yeah. It's going to be interesting going back. A little bit of culture shock, I suspect.
Yeah, I'm partial to small locations because I grew up the same place as John. It was very small, and I immediately moved to Dallas. Yeah, I went to school and university in North Texas, and so I had to get to the big city. I went from Dallas to Houston to the San Francisco Bay Area. And after about 40 some odd years, it's like, this is stupid. I need to get out of the town. So I'm in a little place. I'm in Elgin, Texas, or just outside in a forest. And I love it. I can go outside and see wildlife. I've heard a deer that cruise through the neighborhood. So that makes a big difference in your mental state, getting out of the high pressure of any metropolitan area and into the country for a while is it's like taking a cure of some sort. It really cures you of all your stress.
It has been a complete tonic to my stress. I used to brag that when I was in the corporate world that I was part of the 4 a.m. club. That was up and working, and one of the most popular LinkedIn posts I had, in the last few years. And then I realized that that's really bad for you. I started reading sleep studies and sleep. And so now, sleep is the number one goal, in the day. And having quiet scoop, quiet and dark and not street lights and street noises, it's surprising how much ambient urban noise that we put up with in our lives and that we just absorb into our daily living. And when you get out in the nature for extended periods of time in the quiet, and it shifts your whole being substantially. So I'm a little nervous, to be honest, to get back to Boulder because I'm not ready for that ambient energy to level up again.
You'll probably adjust it pretty quickly, but I'm thinking about how. So I'm retired. I've been retired for several years now, and I know Scoop has too. Retired from having to work, basically. Retired from being in a situation where you're kind of having to bang on things all the time, and there's no hustle to it, nothing to prove. It's like a much more relaxed state. And I'm realizing that this is really how people should live. And we have a culture in this country, with a business culture anyway, where people kind of take pride in overwork, and they take pride in getting too little sleep. I hear people talk about how they get by on 4 hours of sleep a night, which is really, as you say, is terrible for your health. But at the time you're doing it, you feel somewhat energized, and you feel like this is a great thing that I'm doing. I'm really doing, I'm doing God's work, basically. I mean, I'm like busy, busy, busy all the time, and I'm accessible all the time. That's the way I was. Like when you knew me, when we were working on that Whole Foods stuff, and when I was there in Boulder, my phone was always on, waiting for calls. Like I told all of the customer service people to, made sure they had my number and could call me if something came up. And I took a real pride in being on all the time. And I realized that I was kind of, I was on a path that was going to lead to a pretty severe burnout. And it actually did. I mean, more than once I went through periods of burnout. People shouldn't be burning themselves out like that. It's terrible.
No, it is terrible. I used to work 70 to 100 hour work weeks, and just to the point that I was having heart palpitations and thought I was having heart attacks. And it's not a way to live, and I recently made a post about this on LinkedIn around, there's all this pressures we're watching right now, the return to work, return to office, and toxic work environment kind of things. If you're not planning to work here around the clock, you can submit your resume, submit your resignation kind of talk. And I just, yeah, I would, I wouldn't, what, instead of that post, I said, what about from a return to office to a return to natural, to our natural state, where we have a different, where work blends into our regular living and not the other way around. And, I'm not surprised. The posts don't get much attention, and because it's falling on deaf ears still, which is sad, I have to say. But I think it's important for people like us to keep helping others to reform that way, because it's not healthy. It's not a way to be in the world. And I like this new version of not working as much and sleeping as long as I need to, walking the dogs when I want to, enjoying nature, and I hope that I can retain this after the trip, because I think it's healthier for humans.
Yeah, the 5 years that I spent the end of my IT career working remotely was just a lifesaver, because working in IT in the Bay Area, it's like there was no downtime. I was advised early on, you're on call 24/7, and that's exactly how it worked out. But being out here, I think I alienated my entire team, but that was back in the Bay Area, because I'd dial into conference calls and they could hear birds chirping in the background. I'd be on my laptop in the backyard, and the amount of hate generated towards me was kind of hilarious, because I used to be one of those guys who say, those people working remotely, they don't know what they're doing. I realized we really didn't know what we were doing. Working outside the office is good for your mental and physical being.
Yeah. I think if one positive thing that COVID gave us, it gave us a sense that there is a different way to live, outside of the office. And I hope some of that is retained, because I think it was a great benefit to society, that part of it. Aside from COVID, it was, I think, what we got out of that in terms of understanding that this rigidity of work, industrial work hours, maybe needs to be reconsidered.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot where work is concerned. There's a lot to be considered, not just how many hours you work and how much you put into it, but also kind of the framework for the work that you're doing. I turned my company, small company, into a co-op, a tech co-op. Yeah. And I never regretted that. It was a little harder in some ways, to make sure everybody was on the same page and to keep things moving in the right direction. But it overall, it was worth it, because the sense we had was we had a sense that we were all working together toward the same end. There wasn't a lot of competition and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. People didn't try to undermine other people. Everybody was supportive of everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I've worked in environments where it wasn't like that, and I think that that's unhealthy too. Mm-hmm. Cooperation is the thing. Competition may have its place, but it shouldn't like prevail in all situations, and mm-hmm. it probably shouldn't be the way that we organize ourselves from day to day.
I've been thinking a lot about the next chapter a lot. And, I have a question for the both of you, which is, I've been thinking a lot about, what does capitalism 2.0 look like for us? We have some experiments around public benefit corporations and social good, quasi corporations. I think it would be really interesting in my next chapter to help society move from this, some of the things that aren't working with capitalism, and what it looks like in the future. And I'm just curious what you guys think about that. Your tech co-op, John, is really intriguing to me, but I'm curious how you guys look at it on, the side of retirement and, the way the people you're interacting with these days.
Well, part of my answer would be, I think to try to work cooperatively is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, co-ops have their issues too, it's even more crucial to have people on board who are a good fit for what you're doing and for the group, and that can be a challenge sometimes. But it's definitely worthwhile to try to move toward more cooperative thinking and away from simply competitive thinking. And I'm sure you've heard of the triple bottom line, right?
Yes.
That's another important thing, is to consider things other than profit. You can be profitable. You can earn pretty well without being greedy. You don't have to be greedy, but greed has been a huge factor in the business environment of this country for quite some time. And I'm thinking back to Gordon Gekko in that movie Wall Street. Greed is good.
Or
well,
even
greed
back to-
is not good. It's another thing that's tough,
Yeah, or even back to the Gilded Age. Even back to the Gilded Age, right? We've seen these periods of time where concentration of power has occurred and concentration of wealth has occurred. And you have to think that there's a great rebalance ahead, you know, the and it's just, you know, it'd be interesting to think about that and what that could look like in its next iteration.
I mean, I think it's true. I think people don't want to live this way. They can't really live this way. It's not the right kind of life to have. And you can already see in the resistance to the path that we've been on, to like make America gilded again, you know. That's not a path most people are comfortable with, including a lot of people who've you know, who were supportive of the current president. They're having, I think, second thoughts because they can see the direction that he has in mind is not the direction that they thought they were choosing when they voted for him. And but I can't see the sad and really tough problem is that I can't see how we get past this point without some real strife, you know, some real difficulty. And that's unfortunate. But it was probably coming no matter what, even if the other person had got elected, you know.
Yeah, the
I think
environment
there's
was already
kind of a
set.
reckoning in this country. Yeah, we kind of have to have a reckoning about where we decide how we want to live. And I see that Scoop has something to say.
Yeah, the capitalism 2.0, I'm hoping it's better because in our little town, I live outside of it, but Elgin, Texas used to be a bunch of small businesses, your family run, really nice places to go. And all of a sudden, they built a Walmart and the businesses went away. They are gone. There are many, many empty, storefronts that used to be wonderful places. And now Amazon showed up. And so we've got warfare between Amazon and Walmart, which one's going to get all the business? And there's no room for any local businesses. And that's the thing I miss the most is being able to have a small place to go in that you actually know the name of the owner. That's unique in a small town, but I used to enjoy that, and I don't enjoy it anymore because they're all gone.
Yeah, I mean, the Amazon and Walmart era for sure, but there's also a quieter shift occurring that we're not really aware of, and kind of where PE is coming, private equity is coming down into more local roll-ups where they're not changing the storefront name, but they're rolling them up, you know, multiple stores behind the scenes. And it's a kind of a quieter shift from Main Street ownership, from community ownership to some more aggregated ownership as well. And I worry about that transition as well. To your point, you know, being able to walk in and you know John who runs your dry cleaner, or you know the person who runs your local grocery. And on my business brokerage side at a local Boulder owned grocery store, convenience store, has really unique products and that kind of thing. And they're just getting priced out of Pearl Street area, you know, and the rents are too high and they can't continue on. And but it's a local, you know, it's a locally known and a place, you know. And so I worry about, you know, the finding a way to return local ownership to the communities.
Yeah, our pal Cory Doctorow has a term, enchidification, that he uses to describe kind of what happens with the big tech companies, how the more money they make and the bigger they become, the less they become a service for their actual users, and the more they become a service for other source, the bigger sources of money like advertisers and that sort of thing. A lot of the times it's advertising. And basically they tend to diminish the quality of their service while trying to build and build and build the revenue sources and the revenue amounts. And I think that that is not something that just happens in tech. I mean, it's something that happens with bricks and mortar stores. It's the thing about Walmart moving in, you know, and forcing everybody else out. And shitification is a good term for that.
I mean, I am seeing some responsible roll-ups where you know, like Mountain Town kind of companies that are rolling up together, but serving a Mountain Town region, you know, or Mountain Town communities, and certainly increasing their margins by increasing their buying power with suppliers, but still having a local brand. I think there are responsible examples out there of roll-ups that are also keeping a community feel to it. So, but we have to be conscious about it. You know, we have to be, you know, we have to, you have, like anything, you have to put energy into making capitalism 2.0 to be something that's, you know, evolved from what we've had in the past.
Our current leaders are starting to favor recession as a strategy. Apparently, they're thinking that if we have a recession, there will be some benefit from that. And I'm not sure what that would be, but maybe the idea is that it's more of a reboot or a reset. I'm not sure their intentions for it would be the same as mine. I hope we don't go through something like that. But if we do, maybe we restore the sense of local, you know, local business.
Yeah. Maybe
as part of the recovery from something like that. Again, I don't think that's what they have in mind, but I suppose it's possible. Really, we have to start thinking a lot about what is right for humans to live a really intensely human life and not be sucked into. Well, you know, like with technology can potentially be somewhat dehumanizing, but it doesn't have to be. It can also be supportive of human endeavor. And we just need to make sure that we're taking the right course, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we are at the moment.
Future uncertain.
Jeez. It's turned into a depressing conversation.
Well, I was about to say that out of all of these struggles, almost always something positive comes out of it. You know, it, no matter the struggle or the reason for the struggle, humanity does have a really amazing resiliency to bounce back. And so I, you know, that's something else. I was just, if we can close on a positive note, John, that this trip has restored my positivity toward humanity and toward our future. I got to see it one human at a time and one beautiful place in the planet at a time. And, you know, I'm positive. I'm bullish on our future.
Yeah. Sometimes people just need a kick in the ass to wake them up to what's important.
Agreed. Nothing wrong with a good kick in the ass from time to time.
Yeah. One last thing has occurred to me. Are you paying any attention to like news and that sort of thing? Or are you just kind of blowing that stuff off?
No, yeah, I'm still catching it. You know, I don't let myself immerse too much in it. You know, I shifted the amount of time. My daily schedule shifted, you know, so it's sleep number one, you know, being outside number two, walking the dogs, and then, you know, reading and learning. So I kind of flipped the equation. All the things we do where we put work first and then everything else takes a long, I flipped that equation this year. So work fills in after that, those items. So, but yeah, I still read news and still keep up, still make debates with my uncle and my friends and, you know, and about life and politics, and probably more so than ever, actually, John. So
it's just not the same priority as it might have been.
It's not. And I'm not as worried about it as I used to be. You know, I'm not worried about the current short-term situation. You know, it will pass. This too will pass, and humans are good people. You know, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, it always does pass, doesn't it?
It always does.
I meant to talk about meditation, but I was going to talk to you about meditation, but we've run out of time. So maybe you can come back.
I would love it. Thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Give us an update on the current state of the nation from the roadways. It'd be good to hear what's going on out there, because I'm not going out there anymore.
Yeah, I'll certainly keep you up to date as it goes. And it's just really good to meet you, Scoop. And John, it's really good to see you, my old friend. Hope we see each other sooner than it's taken this last time. So thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. And I'll certainly show up in Boulder soon enough.
Always have a place to stay.
By the time you're back there, yeah. Okay, well, thank you, sir.
All right. Take care.
You can follow the Plutopia News Network at plutopia.io. On Facebook, go to @PlutopiaNews. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. With John Lepkoski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.